It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent rodhunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
I love living here in San Diego. I've been here for a very long time, since 1984. It's a great place to live, not merely the city of San Diego itself, San Diego proper, but the entire general area. Coronado Island, Julian. You'd think both of those locations were on opposite sides of the country, but they're all here in San Diego, so rich in variety, so many things to do, the theaters, and then there's SeaWorld, San Diego Zoo, San Diego Wild Animal Park, renamed Safari Park for some crazy reason, but anyway, same park, great place. But I have to tell you, our happy locale can be quite confusing for visitors, and not just visitors. Anybody who recently moved here, and that was certainly my story and my experience when I moved my family out here in the summer of 1984. I had been here before as a visitor. I had been to the zoo. I had been to Balboa Park. It was a while ago. I didn't remember how to get to those places, and you didn't have a GPS in your car in those days. Much to my surprise, when returning to San Diego in search of a new home, I discovered that Balboa Avenue is a major street, and silly me, I just figured that Balboa Avenue was the street that would eventually lead you to Balboa Park. Balboa Park is on Balboa Avenue somewhere, right? Wrong, but thank you for playing. In fact, it couldn't possibly be farther away. In no time at all, I realized that not a whole lot of thought went into naming streets or institutions in San Diego. Either that, or skilled planners and board members enjoyed messing with people's heads. When I first moved here, I started an all-student church at UCSD. I'll never forget the time I was walking to an appointment on that campus. A family pulled over, visitors to the area. They rolled down the window and asked me where the UCSD Medical Center was. I didn't know how to break it to them. I had to try to explain that despite the name, UCSD Medical Center was in Hillcrest, way on the other side of town, nowhere near the campus in La Jolla. Now, that's since changed. They do have chapters of that hospital out at UCSD. But speaking of the UCSD campus, there were also at that time, back in 1984, four different colleges. There were four of them, and even though each was under the umbrella of UCSD, each college also had its own name and its own distinctive feature. There was Ravel College, Muir College, Third College, and Warren College. Now, about Third College, I should tell you how it got its name, and I know what you're thinking. Well, they called it Third College because it was obviously the third college they built. Well, yes, it was the third college they built, but no, that was not the reason for the name. You see, this was a campus that emphasized third world studies. Catching on? The explanation was always so much fun. Yes, we are the third college, but that's not why we call ourselves third college. We call ourselves third college because of third world studies, not because we're the third college, even though we are the third college. Finally, a number of years later, somebody decided to put the title out of its misery and renamed it Thurgood Marshall College. I guess as long as the Thur sound was still there, it was permissible. But I saved the best for last. Sharp hospitals. Now, sharp hospitals are good hospitals. They're fine hospitals. I'm only talking about their locations. There are many. And while different sharps can be found in different parts of town, there is also a whole cluster of them, a whole collection of sharp hospitals, all on the same street or very close proximity with separate parking structures for each. There's Sharp Memorial, Sharp Reese Steele, Sharp Mary Birch, Sharp Children's. That one has since been renamed to Rady's, but it was Sharp originally. Naturally, the buildings and parking structures all have a similar look. How fun it must be to work at the desk in the main lobby. Oh no, the person you're looking for is not here at Sharp Memorial. That's Sharp Mary Birch. Look, as a pastor, I often visit people in the hospital. I hear that one of my parishioners is sick, but over the years, I have to confess, upon hearing that somebody I knew was ill, in addition to immediately praying for their recovery, I would also add a little prayer that maybe they weren't as sharp. Of course, I'll visit them wherever they are. And naturally, these days, between MapQuest and GPS, you can find the correct parking structure and correct hospital building much more easily. Except that now they're under construction. How fun is that? In certain places where you should be at the front door, the door is locked, you're redirected, and oh, there are different versions of the redirection, of course. Three different people will send you three different places. Only recently, I needed to visit somebody on the second floor of Sharp Memorial. I pushed the elevator button. It didn't go to the second floor. It went to the third floor. I figured that was just a fluke. So I tried to take it back down to the second floor. It went down to the first floor. Basically, it alternates between floor one and floor three. Finally, upon returning to floor one, I was informed by somebody else using the elevator that this particular elevator doesn't go to floor two at all. Ever. Never. It's not programmed to do so. I never would have imagined an elevator preset to skip a floor, especially since the number for floor two is right there on the panel. And yeah, you can push the button for floor two. It just won't take you to floor two. That's all. Yeah, if you want an elevator that goes to floor two, you need to walk down that hallway and then turn left. I'm not sure what reason these geniuses had. It probably has something to do with COVID or global warming, because everything's about COVID or global warming. I still like living in San Diego. I still love living in San Diego. But I have to wonder if some of these titles and designs were courtesy of those who brought us the Winchester Mystery House. This is Bob Siegel, making the obvious obvious.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Oh,
The left continues to freak out over Elon Musk, the Musk bus. All right, let's get this straight. I'm so sick and tired of these talking points that are disseminated to everybody. One of them is that he's an unelected official and that he's bringing an oligarchy. He's rich and he's influencing our government. These are the people that never bat an eyebrow over what rich George Soros has done all these years. I heard one senator give a speech about how he wasn't even born in the United States. No, he wasn't born in the United States, but he came legally. He's become a citizen. I guess all those millions of people that came here illegally are okay, but Elon Musk, because he's working for Trump, is a problem. And let's be clear, before he came to work for Trump, he wasn't a problem. He invented the Tesla. He was the darling of the media, the electric car that was going to save us from global warming. But now he's an oligarch. He's a threat to democracy. President Trump campaigned with Elon Musk, telling us that Elon Musk was going to do something about stopping government waste, since he's the richest man in the world and he knows how to run a business. And he knew how to streamline Twitter, turning it into X. He told us just exactly what he was going to do with Musk. He told us just exactly what Musk was going to do. And he got elected. If that's not democracy, the word ought to be removed from the dictionary. Oh, and I love this one. I just love this one. Now they're freaking out because he spoke at President Trump's cabinet meeting. He's not even an official member of the cabinet, but he was at the cabinet meeting. Yeah, well, he wasn't running the cabinet meeting the way Jill Biden did, the first cabinet meeting in a year, because Joe never had them. Even when he had them, he turned it over to his wife. That didn't concern anybody, did it? But Elon Musk speaks at the cabinet meeting. It's a problem. And what does he speak about? He's addressing this concern over the email that he sent out. He's explaining himself. We've been hearing that he won't explain himself. He won't come before Congress. Now he comes before a cabinet. He explains himself. That isn't good enough either. And it was a pretty simple explanation. My favorite of all the Musk criticisms comes from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She says he's not very smart. I mean, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is telling us that Elon Musk isn't very smart. And she does it while she giggles. He's not very smart. That's like a sloth making fun of a leopard because a leopard doesn't move very fast. What are her impeccable credentials? She's a bartender with a big mouth. And I mean no disrespect for bartenders. It's an honorable profession. I don't believe in getting drunk, but there's nothing wrong with going in and having a drink. And most bartenders don't have big mouths either. Most of them are very good listeners, but she never listens to anybody. She just talks and talks. Like in 2019, when she said the world would not exist anymore in 12 years if something wasn't done to address global warming. Well, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, not much has been done about global warming. I know we have all these green deals that you tried to jam through Congress, but China wasn't paying attention to them. India wasn't paying attention to them. Saudi Arabia wasn't paying attention to them. So the world was on that same course. We're 6 years into your 12-year prediction. You know what's going to happen 6 years from now? Nothing. And this is a woman who knows nothing. When she first got into politics, she was giving an interview about Israel and the plight of the poor Palestinians, and she did not know what she was talking about. In fact, somebody asked her, "What did you mean when you talked about the Israel-Palestinian situation?" She goes, "Oh, I think I meant the oppression." She thinks she meant, she knows nothing about it. Neither do half the other people who talk about that subject, but I digress. The very idea of her laughing at Elon Musk. But the others aren't laughing. They're complaining. What did he do to deserve this position? He's just a man who was born into privilege. Okay, he was born into a prominent family, but he was not born the richest man in the world. He did that himself through innovation, through hard work. He's a businessman. He's an entrepreneur. He knows enough about engineering to oversee engineering projects. Once again, he invented the Tesla. I don't even like the Tesla, but you have to have something on the ball to be able to produce a brand new car like that, that runs strictly on electricity. People are always making this joke like, hey, this isn't rocket science. Well, Elon Musk practically is rocket science. He started SpaceX. He founded OpenAI. And all he did this last week, the action that's making Democrats fall apart at the seams, is he sent out an email to government employees saying, tell us five things you did last week. Who couldn't tell us five things they did at work in a week? You ought to be able to do it in a day. Even a caveman could tell you five things he did in one day.
Sharpen spear. Find animal. Kill animal. Cook animal. Eat animal.
See? Doesn't take a rocket scientist. Even a caveman can do it. And I'm sure these members of the deep state worrying about their jobs could talk about five things they did in a week as well. And again, they could do it in one day. Five things I did today. I called Trump Hitler. I called Trump an existential threat. I called Trump a convicted felon. I had lunch. I came back and said democracy weighs in the balance. There you go. Five things. I'm telling you, folks, if Elon Musk saved somebody's life, they would complain. He's planning on doing that. He's planning on using SpaceX to rescue those people that have been stranded on the space station. He's probably going to pull it off. And you know what the left will say?
Well, yeah. Yeah, he saved their lives, but you know who else once saved somebody's life? Hitler!
This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
This is Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in three serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burn down. You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric, license number 480539, WNS Electric.
Bob Siegel's novel, Push the Winds Around, is now available in both ebook and print copies. Check out this customer review from Amazon.com. Talk about a good read. Have you ever thought, if only God would allow me to go back in time to right my wrongs? What if I could change those decisions I made? What would be the outcome? Would the changes make a difference? If you have ever thought about that, then this book is your challenge. The story is so good you won't want it to end. You'll see why it deserves 5 stars. Bob Siegel, you've done it again. Can't wait for the sequel. Push the Winds Around, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Say hello again to my producer, Brendan Thomas.
Well, good evening, Bob. How are you doing tonight?
Doing okay, Brendan. How about yourself?
I'm doing fantastic. So for those who don't know, because you guys like listening to the Bob Siegel Show more than some other stuff, the Oscars are going on right now.
This year, I did know that they were going on. Last year, I said I didn't even know because I don't follow them anymore. In the past, even though I wasn't much interested, I'd come home and watch a little bit. growing up in theater, and I have a degree in theater, and mm-hmm. I've written and directed plays. To me, the Oscar was like the Super Bowl. I just loved it.
I couldn't agree more.
And the other award show, the Tonys, the Emmys, they've become so PC and so woke. This year, I hear that three of the best films nominated have transgender characters in them. It's become disgusting.
I finally looked at one, or I heard one of them. They actually made the transgender person a villain in the movie, which I was surprised.
Boy, that's somebody's head on a roll for that.
Exactly. I was like, wow, so you're not going to...
And isn't there a man that transgendered into a woman that's nominated as a woman this year, or did I get that wrong?
No, as far as I know of, that's not one of the actresses. I thought they actually nominated, but I'll take a look.
Kind of like in the tradition of the men getting women's trophies in swim meet.
Well, in the meantime, I guess I can read a few things here very quickly. Let me first off say, I have not seen a single one of these movies.
Well, we saw Wicked. And we did see Wicked.
You did? I did not see it personally yet, but that did win Best Production Design. I'm not surprised on that. That one was...
That'll win a few things, but I don't think it's going to win the Best Picture. I think they're going to give it to one of those... I think that musical about the transgender is going to win.
Emilia Perez.
That's my prediction.
It did already win Best Original Song, which makes sense. I mean, it's from a musical, for goodness sake.
There's a tune I'll be whistling every morning.
Best Makeup and Hairstyling went to a horror movie of all things, The Substance. I was not expecting
that. Oh, you gotta love that.
Yeah. Film editing is Anora. Sean Baker is one of those directors, and he's also the editor of his own movie, too. He's one of those guys that's very complicated, because there's certain elements I do like about his movies, especially when it comes to showing lower class in terms of the social class and the economic wise. I like how he does his movies there, but man, there's a lot of annoying things in his movies that I just couldn't get into, whether it be certain characters, maybe the ending of some movies of his. So it's very mixed on him, and I haven't seen Anora yet to even comment on it. Best Costume Design, for the first time ever, an African-American has won that award. It is Paul Tazwell for Wicked. And again, the costumes were very good
in mm-hmm. Wicked.
An Iranian short film actually pulled off the upset for In the Shadow of the Cypress. Best Animated Feature Film went to Flow, which was a completely independent animated film. It actually beat Disney this year, finally. I think this is the first time Disney hasn't won in a very long time.
Disney probably isn't as high these days.
No, I mean, the only Disney movie that's in here is Inside Out 2, and even then, I heard okay things about it, but I have also heard, like, in terms of, like, behind-the-scenes stuff, there was a lot of sketchy work labor issues that Disney was trying to get around from. So writing, again, it's Anora from Sean Baker. Best Adapted Screen.
Boy, they've already had... What time did it start? It's so early in the evening.
I think it started at 5.
Wow.
I want to say. Best Adapted Screenplay goes to Conclave, which is about how they're electing a new pope. So my question to you I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago,
was how popes get elected.
Exactly. I might have to watch that movie.
Cardinals.
Yeah. I might watch that movie so I can better understand it. So that one, Best Adapted Screenplay. We also have Best Actress in a Supporting Role, Zoe Saldana. I think I'm saying that right. For Emilia Perez. That's not the girl. That's the transgender. I'll take a look and see here in the actress role.
So that
role.
Was supporting actor or supporting actress?
No, supporting actress, mind you.
And that was the transgender role.
So no, it was not. No, was, Zoe. No, here it is. Yep, you're right. Actress in our leading role is Carla Sofia Gassan, who is the transgender person.
See,
there.
So they're doing now to female actors what they've been doing to female people.
Right,
in sports.
Right. Yeah. Best supporting actor, by the way, is Macaulay Culkin's brother, Kieran Culkin. He won best supporting actor.
You mean there's a Culkin that can actually act?
Exactly, right? The other Culkin I know of, man, oh man.
I loved Home Alone, but he was the worst actor in the movie.
You know what?
I still loved the movie, and it worked.
I'm trying to argue against you, but
he had some moments, but he was such a wooden actor.
I guess so. You know, he's really good in, surprisingly enough, is I think it's called Good Boy, where it's like
I've never seen that.
He acts like a good boy in front of his aunt, but then when his aunt turns away, he's doing like really horrific things.
That sounds like a fun story.
Yeah, and the way his like the wooden acting, like you say, it actually works out in the end.
He could have gotten better over the years. So
definitely. Yeah. All right, so the Oscars are going on. If there's any other updates, I doubt I'm going to tell you anyway, so who cares? All right, moving on. Canada is yet again at it again. They are booing the national anthem once again.
And I also heard they changed the name of their Americano drink to something like Canadio or something
That's just, come on. What I'm talking about is WWE was in Toronto last night, and for some reason, I don't know why, they decided to still sing the national anthem. I know it's an annual thing where every event they do before, they'll sing the national anthem, but they know that they're going to get this booing here when they perform the national anthem in Canada, of all places. So they decided to do it, and they still booed. One of the broadcasters, Pat McAfee, McAfee actually went on to say, this is the most stacked Eliminations Chambers matches we've ever had. It's just a shame that we are in one of the worst countries in the world who's booing at our national anthem to start the entire thing, but I don't care. I'm going to try to focus on this historic night and not poor old Canada. That's was his exact words on there. So
this is an American broadcast?
Yes, this is an American broadcast. Yeah, wow. This is an American broadcast doing it in Canada because they're that popular.
Well, so, I know they're upset about the tariffs, but maybe if they did something about the fentanyl traffic, Trump would lower or get rid of the tariffs.
Well, again, I think it also comes down to October can't come any sooner for Canada. That conservative person I was telling you about, he cannot wait to step into office and then we can finally get some things done in terms of getting rid of the tariffs. I think the tariffs are starting next week?
Yeah, just a couple of days. This coming week.
Oh, this coming week. Days, oh, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
Now, they have been doing a better job with the illegal immigration, but they're not doing as good a job with the fentanyl. So my understanding is that Trump's kind of weighing and considering exactly what he'll do at this point.
Yeah, I know that there's some border states for Canada. Specifically, I know for sure North Dakota, they passed a law saying that all parents have to take drug tests now. So it's a governmental rule.
So you can't just come into the country and say, this is my child.
Not only that, but specifically if they question that you're on drugs, certainly, because meth and fentanyl are huge, huge proponents in those states. Right. You have to be forced to
do it. But you do mean parents coming across the border, right?
I think both. I think, okay. Yeah, no matter what. Yeah. And then lastly, I want to mention are some celebrity deaths. We had a bunch this week.
Well, Gene Hackman was a sad one and a very mysterious one.
95 years old. And again, it was his wife and his dog as well, too, in this whole thing.
And yet two other dogs. And at first they thought that it might be carbon dioxide because
that's what I heard at first, too. Yeah.
But then it turns out that his pacemaker's recorder said that it was about 9 days before he was found that he died. So then you're thinking, well, then maybe it was just cardiac arrest. But then why would his 65-year-old wife suddenly die at the same time? It's very bizarre. I hope it wasn't foul play. They don't suspect foul play, and yet they say it's suspicious.
Yes,
Well, I understand when they use the word suspicious, it gives them the right to go in there without a warrant or to get a warrant, I guess, and go in there and collect data. So I think they used that word even though they're not expecting foul play.
Well, it's interesting how the police are very conclusive on a lot of these investigations. Like, do you remember that New Orleans attack? And they said, this is not a terrorist attack, everybody. Yeah. And then not even 2 minutes later, they're like, okay, there's actually some terrorism involved in this.
Immediately. So. Immediately. In fact, I think it was an FBI woman that said it wasn't a terrorist attack.
Right. So not only is our police, but I should say our federal agents are also all very conclusive in those certain situations. Some other people I wanted to mention that passed away.
Well, before you go on, ask you, what's your favorite Gene Hackman movie?
Oh my gosh. Oh, there's so many to choose from. Let me start off with The Royal Tenenbaums. I don't know if you've ever seen that
I've seen
before.
That. I like that.
Yeah, it's a very nice one. I would say if I'm going to introduce somebody to a Wes Anderson movie, because he's got a lot of weird movies on his filmography, Royal Tenenbaums is one of the first ones I would mention. Bonnie and Clyde is a classic.
Yeah, he was very good in that. Mm-hmm. And I loved him in Superman, of course, as Lex Luthor.
Absolutely. The French Connection is a fantastic movie, too. 1971, that surprises me, that how well of a thriller that is, even from 1970s like that. Another one I want to shout out to is probably, I have a soft spot for Hoosiers, I will admit.
I like Hoosiers. That's a favorite with a lot of people. My favorite, though, was Mississippi Burning. I just loved that movie, and I thought that was his vintage role.
Yeah, also, I mean, come on, Superman. I mean, Lex Luger himself. Yes, I mean, come on. And the Poseidon Adventures, I'll always have a fun time.
He was very
time
good in that.
Yes, yeah. So those are just some of my favorites. And I bet you have some other ones you want to shout out to, right?
Well, Mississippi Burning.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Gotcha. So the other ones that passed away, Robert John, he was a singer. Some of his hit songs include Hey There, Lonely Girl in 1980. He did a cover of The Lion Sleeps Tonight in 1972. And he had a number one hit in 1979 called Sad Eyes as well.
So he did Hey There, Lonely Girl. I always thought that was a young Michael Jackson or a young Donny Osmond?
They did covers.
They did covers.
Yeah, he did the original.
Because I remember, Lonely Girl.
Well, I mean, he's got a similar voice. He was one of those like falsetto guys back in the day. Joey Mullen, he was the senior guitarist and keyboardist for the band Goldfinger. He was the last surviving original member. He passed away. Goldfinger, if you remember, had 1969 hit Come and Get It, 1970 No Matter What, 1971 Day After Day, and 1972 Baby Blue. More than likely, Jim Barry Carrier has a good idea of who he is, probably, too. David Johansen, the singer of punk band New York Dolls, passed away. He also is an actor. He was in, I would never suggest anyone watch this movie, by the way, Car 54, Where Are You, 1994.
Now, have you ever seen the original
of
sitcom?
Of course.
I love the sitcom.
The sitcom is
I never watch any of those movie remakes of television
shows. Beverly Hills Hillbillies were terrible, and you know what?
The Brady Bunch at least made it a satire of the Brady Bunch instead of pretending they were recreating the Brady Bunch. So that one, in a way, worked.
And I will say two things about the Flintstones movie, because I know you probably hate it, but
they at least looked like the characters.
I will say that. Yeah, John Goodman and the production, and
and even Rosie O'Donnell, who I can't stand politically, she made a good Betty.
Yes, I agree. I agree. So then we are in agreement on that part, at least. So Roberto Orci, he's a screenwriter. He passed away at 51. He did The Legend of Zorro, Mission Impossible 3, the Star Trek remake, Transformers, Cowboys and Aliens, and The Amazing Spider-Man 2. Oh, by the way, going back to David Johansen, sorry. He also was in Scrooged, which is the Bill Murray movie.
The Bill Murray version,
He was the Ghost of Christmas Past. Last one I have is Roberta Flack. She passed away at 88.
Oh, she's famous for The First Time Ever I Saw Your Face.
That's right.
And which was introduced in the movie Play Misty for me.
For me, it's Killing Me Softly with his song.
Oh, yeah.
Very great song there, too. So very sad to hear all these people passing away. But obviously, our thoughts and prayers are going out to their fans and family. Last news story I have before we move on to the main event tonight. Grossmont Union High School District has fired 61 people from their staff members.
Now, fired or laid off?
They said fired specifically. Now, I will go into
I thought it was almost impossible to fire somebody in the public school system.
49 credentialed teachers, counselors, and assistant principals have all been let go. All 9 librarians on staff and 12 members of the school district support staff have all been fired. The district could rescind their pink slips before next year, but it's worth noting the district was never forced to file pink slips because of their reserves that they have. According to what they have, Grossmont Union is operating with a surplus of money estimated between $35 and $40 million. According to a school
Usually budget cuts are related to firings, but you're saying they have a surplus of money?
Yeah, they're operating with a surplus.
So then why are they needing to fire these people?
They said that within 12 years, it would be going all the way down to $2 million. So, and they can't afford to fund that.
So they're looking ahead.
Exactly, yes.
I've got to wonder if these teachers are saying, well, why don't you give us a few more years then at least?
Exactly, yeah.
And now, if they're doing DEI, then they don't have my sympathies.
No, I don't know if it's a DEI situation.
But maybe if that's not the reason they're being fired, but still, if DEI is what they were teaching, then I'm not too sad about it.
Also worth noting is that the school board did invite the media to a closed-door session, but the board members refused to explain the reason for the votes to the reporters. The board voted 4-1 in favor of the cuts, so keep that in mind as well. I believe there was a GoFundMe for trying to help out those librarians and other staff members that were fired from this situation, and I believe there's also a union situation too that's going to get filed for this whole
thing. You know, with the internet, I'm just glad we still have libraries.
It's true.
I would think every librarian could be out of business soon.
Yeah, so now the teachers are in control of the library, so I can't wait to see how that mess is going to go through later on as the school year progresses. But nevertheless, we'll keep you posted on if anything happens or changes in this situation. In the meantime, we're going to go to commercial, and we have some Bible questions
to
finish
up
for tonight.
Back to the Bible. This is Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Looking for a place where you can be yourself without having to act more spiritual than you really are? Looking for a church where you can have the dynamics of a large worship service, but the intimacy of a small group? Why not try Skyline Church, located in Rancho San Diego by 94 in Hamasha? I know you'll enjoy the preaching. You can also get to know people through a midweek small group. And for those who want to dig deeper into the Bible, a whole series of classes are offered on Sunday mornings. I teach one of them myself, Forbidden Table Talk, same name as my column, a time to bring up any Bible-related question at all. I would love to see you there. Now, I'm not saying Skyline doesn't have other good classes that you could take as an alternative to mine. I'm just saying don't take any of those. Take Forbidden Table Talk. Actually, you'll enjoy any experience you choose at Skyline Church.
Skyline Church.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show, our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture, and always here with some great Bible questions, well-thought-out questions, my producer, Brendan Thomas.
May I add well-researched questions as well, I feel like.
That's just very well-researched.
Thank you, thank you. So, my first question has to do with overpopulation. When God first created Adam and Eve, when they were still in the Garden of Eden, he charged them to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. When he cursed Eve in Genesis chapter 3, verse 16, he told her he would greatly multiply pain in childbirth. Both passages could imply that it would have been possible for Adam and Eve to have children in Eden. If death had not entered the world, and if all of Adam and Eve's descendants had followed God's admonishments, the world would have been filled. So, would it have been overpopulated if that was the case? That's my question towards you.
Well, problems with overpopulation and the idea of overpopulation are usually related and associated with food supply. And
yeah,
that would not have been an issue if Adam and Eve had not fallen into sin. Now, it's a very interesting question whether they started populating the world before they left the garden. We read that story, and it only takes you 3 minutes to read the story of Adam and Eve. That doesn't mean they were only in the garden for 3 minutes.
No, of course not. No,
they were not even mortal yet. They were living in eternity. And they could have been there a million years. What's interesting is when Eve has her first child, she names him Cain, and that name's associated with the pain she was having in childbirth. She said, "The Lord helped me have a child." Well, remember when Cain killed his brother Abel and got banished, but he was afraid of these people he's going to run into?
Mm-hmm.
Where did these people come from? I think it's possible that it was a whole community that was banished and that they were populating the world before, and that Cain was just Eve's first child born in mortality, born in pain. But I would say the overpopulation issue would not have been an issue if they had never fallen into sin.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And again, like you said, there was only two people there. And mind you, God does all sorts of wonders in our world. Like, again, the garden was fruitful and plentiful by itself. He had seeds inside those fruits to help grow even more food on time over
exactly.
The time, too. So
we're told that all of nature is under a curse until Jesus Christ returns. But that all happened after Adam and Eve's fall. So if they had just stayed in the bliss they were in and they were fruitful and multiplied, I don't think it would have been a problem.
See, Adam and Eve, see what you've done here? Come on, Adam.
Come on, Adam. Yeah.
All right. Well, that answers that question. I'm debating whether to add this last one and then just go ahead and go to we'll go to commercial right now.
Okay.
All right. So we'll be doing one last commercial, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about the American Revolution and how it relates to a Bible question of mine.
Okay. Sounds good.
Not sure when to try an unusual novel? Let the customers speak for themselves. Here is another Amazon customer review for Bob Siegel's latest book, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. While there is nothing in this book that would stop you from giving it to or reading it to your kids, this book will certainly hold an adult's interest as well. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament has it all. Magic, talking cats, bullies who get their comeuppance, fun dialogue, and a good story. Do not let the title fool you. While Christmas does play a prominent role, this is really not a Christmas story, and it can be read at any time of the year, except February 31st. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
I'm Dr. David Poole, president of San Diego Christian College. Did you know that SDCC has been training servant leaders since 1970? That's over 50 years of making an impact. Our degree and certificate programs blend academic excellence with a Christian worldview. Whether you're a traditional age college student or a working professional who wants to complete their degree or certificate program, we may be a match for you. Learn more at sdcc.edu. That's sdcc.edu. San Diego Christian College, over 50 years in the making.
Welcome back to one more segment of the Bob Siegel Show. Say hello again to Brendan Thomas.
Well, I am a history buff, not as much as one of my friends, Hunter. Shout out to Hunter if you're listening, because he loves these history questions I give you to on the air. So, since I like to call myself a history buff, I had a question for you. Romans chapter 13, verses 1 through 7 states, "Let every person be subject to the governing authorities. For there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authorities resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. For rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. Would you have no fear of the one who is in authority? Then do what is good, and you will receive his approval, for he is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid. For he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is the servant of God, an avenger who carries out God's wrath on the wrongdoer. Therefore, one must be in subjection, not only to avoid God's wrath, but also for the sake of consciousness. For because of this, you will also pay taxes, for the authorities are ministers of God attending to this very thing." Now, based on this, I couldn't help but interpret this passage back to historical context. One of the historical contexts that I thought of was the American Revolution. Does this verse make our revolution biblically unjustified, is my question to you.
Okay, well, let's back up.
Okay.
In the Bible, we often have rules and exceptions to rules. Now, okay. One of the general rules with Paul was whatever government you're living under, go ahead and obey their laws so long as their laws do not violate conscience or cause us to disobey God. Mm-hmm. So I also want to point out that in the same New Testament, Peter and John were dragged before a court and ordered to not preach the gospel, and that they were going to go to jail if they did. And they said, whether it is right in the sight of God to listen to you rather than God, you must be the judge. We cannot but speak about what we have seen and heard. Mm-hmm. Now the Romans, I know we watch all these movies like Spartacus and Gladiator, and the Romans did conquer the world, but if you had to live under conquerors, the Romans weren't bad conquerors to live under. We've heard the phrase the Pax Romana, mm-hmm. the period of some 200 years of peace. Under the Romans, people received police protection. Now, you had slavery under the Romans. It was the citizens that had it really well. But there was police protection. There were motels, inns, and convenient locations. There was a postal system. It wasn't a bad government to live under. And the early church was not in any kind of position to wage any kind of war against Rome. Neither did the apostles want them to. They did not want Christianity to turn into a bloodbath. They wanted a peaceful revolution that changes our hearts. That's where they were coming from. There are times in history when we have what I would call a just war. I would call the Civil War just,
yes,
because that ended slavery. Certainly World War II was just because it ended the tyranny of the Nazis. The Revolutionary War, I can understand why some people might say, okay, your taxes were too high. Was that something to fight about? And that is something that the Continental Congress debated for a long time, but it was becoming a tyranny, living under the British and under the monarchs, even to the point where assembly was banished and sometimes churches were invaded or burnt down. down. And I think it can be argued that they were fighting for a just cause. And the English government had told them, you can go out to this new world and you could start a colony. And they were promised certain freedoms. They were still going to be part of England, but they were promised certain freedoms that started being slowly taken away with their taxes being increased. So I could see them getting together and saying, you know, we could just become a new country. Essentially, we become a new country.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said, I am still sympathetic when I say that the Revolutionary War was as just a war as ending slavery or ending the Nazis. No, but on the other hand, it wasn't the same as the Christians under Rome, where there's no way they could have overthrown the Roman Empire. It would just have been another Masada. And so I think it was a little bit different. But the general biblical principle, regardless of how we apply it to the Revolutionary War, mm-hmm. is we are to follow the law when it's a just law. If we're ever told to violate our consciences, then we don't. And there was a certain freedom that people living as Christians in colonial America felt to express their faith that was starting to be taken away from England. A lot of them had come out here for religious freedom in the first place. Not everybody. The Jamestown colony was not a religious colony, but many of them, certainly the Puritans and others in the New England era, mm-hmm. were out here for religious freedom. They felt that that was starting to be taken away.
Well, they did bring their religion into Jamestown still anyways.
Like, they still had a church, but still it was mostly a tobacco colony. It wasn't so much a religious
But
colony.
Once again, let's point out the fact that it was started because I believe it was King Henry VIII was telling everybody, no, you are going to transform into this specific religion, right?
Henry VIII was much earlier. He was a ruthless king. It was King George.
George
that they were living under.
Yeah, so King George at the time was saying, no, you have to do this religion that English have traditionally done. You cannot get out of this. And it was specifically Protestant.
Well, there were different colonies that had different religions. They were not forced to all be part of the English church, the Church of England, what became known as the Episcopal Church. They weren't forced to do that, but on the other hand, there were compromises they were being forced to make that some people just felt, I don't have all the freedom that I need to be mm-hmm. a Christian doing this.
I understand. One other comment I wanted to make, too, is World War II also ended, I think, fascism in Italy, didn't it? Because Mussolini fell
And there was a kind of fascism going on in Japan, too, certainly.
Yes, for sure. It didn't do it to Russia till much, much later in the 80s.
With Russia, Russia had nothing to brag about either, especially under Stalin, but it became kind of the enemy of my enemies. Remember, Russia, Stalin and Hitler had a pact originally.
They did, yes.
And then Hitler went and betrayed him. Mm-hmm. So England immediately seized opportunity and made peace with Stalin. In fact, there's a line. It's in the novel, The Winds of War. So it's attributed to Churchill. Whether he really said it or not, I don't mm-hmm. know. But it sounds like something he would have said. And it's in the novel, The Winds of War, where one of his assistants, he says, I'm going to go and I'm going to offer a deal with Joseph Stalin. He says, won't people find that hypocrisy, sir, with you being the arch enemy of communism? He said, not at all. My aim is to stop Hitler. If Hitler were to invade hell, I'd make a favorable treaty to the devil.
That's true. One last thing I do want to mention, too. There was nobody back then, fathers of the country, that were more religious than us, honestly. They read the Bible word for word, and they were living by the Bible for sure.
Well, they wouldn't have all passed what we would call an evangelical litmus test, for example. Some of them didn't believe in the Trinity. But they certainly, when people say, well, they were all just deists, a deist is somebody who believes God kind of wound up the universe and sits mm-hmm. back and watch and doesn't get involved. Thomas Jefferson and Ben Franklin were deists, but what deists believed in those days was different than what a deist believes today. And they certainly believed in the providence of God, that God was even behind the American Revolution. That would not qualify with today's definition of a deist.
Mm-hmm. And I do want to read this one quote. I was able to be inspired by this question by reading a thing from gotquestions.org, and this last quote really helps it out a lot. Even if the American Revolution was a violation of Romans chapter 13, we know that the patriots acted in good faith in the name of Christian freedom. And we know that in ensuring years, God has brought about much good from the freedom that was won as a result. I love that quote.
That's
so
absolutely true, that whatever the motives of all of them, God is certainly sovereign. And either way, what are we going to do now? Go back and turn back the clock. But like I said, compared to the Civil War, I could understand somebody that says, was this a do or die situation? But King George was becoming pretty tyrannical.
Oh, they
called him a tyrant in the Declaration of Independence.
Exactly. So. And not to mention the fact that we still wanted to set up our own government, and the overtaxation taxation on things.
Yeah, like I said, there was this deal that you're going to be part of England, but you're going to mostly run yourselves. And then they started going back on that. And so their freedoms were infringed upon. Most important, they had the ability. They said, we could declare independence and pull this thing off. That was a very different situation for the Christians living under Rome. They would not have stood a chance. It would have been nothing but a bloodbath.
It was so brave of our founding fathers to do that. And again, thank you to France for helping out so much, because we wouldn't have...
Yeah, it's one of the few things France has done right in the annals of history. Well, they gave us the Statue of Liberty, too.
That's true. But that's more of a mascot.
By the way, have you ever seen the movie 1776? I know it's a musical.
Yeah, I've seen the musical. I have not seen the movie.
Did you like it?
No. Oh, yeah, I love the musical.
Yeah, yes. And some of the songs are kind of cheesy. Others are very clever. But frankly, even if you took the music out, the dialogue is so well written, and it really brings those people to life. Absolutely. I highly recommend everybody go out and rent, or go to Netflix and rent 1776.
We're in the streaming age, Bob. Sorry to say this.
You know what? There's very little about streaming that I like. Half the time, they don't have what you're looking for. Oh, and here's my favorite one on the streaming. Mm-hmm. This program is being brought to you with limited commercial interruptions, and they just interrupted the program to tell you about their limited commercial interruptions.
Not to mention, you still have 3 minutes until the movie comes on, because the average... Come on, guys. Let's go.
I know it's the way of the future. I just don't like it.
Well, I'm looking forward to next week's show, Bob. Thank you so much.
Jim Barrier will be back.
I am so looking forward to a Stump Jim with him. That's for sure.
All right. Yeah, we haven't done Stump Jim Barrier in a while.
Yeah, that's right. So we will see you all next time.